Joining us now on Illinois Lawmakers, Democratic Senate President John Cullerton of Chicago. Mr. President, good to have you on the program again.
Yes, thank you for inviting me.
Your chief takeaway from today's speech by the governor?
Well, the governor just gave the speech, and so we're going to have to take some time to review it. There's going to be a lot of fact-checking, because a lot of the things I heard didn't sound exactly accurate, so that'll be the first thing we'll have to do. But look, at the fact remains that I want to work with the governor. We want to cooperate. He called for cooperation. Cooperation means compromise, which means people have to move off of their previously held positions. And so it's been a year now, and we haven't had a lot of compromise from our side of the ledger, so we're hoping that that would change.
He did say a few minutes ago that although he wants a lot of structural reforms that he says will grow jobs, grow new revenues over the years to come and put us back on a balanced financial footing here, that he doesn't have to have every item in that turnaround agenda.
Yes, well, that's probably a good thing, because a lot of those items were very radical ideas that couldn't pass in a supermajority of Republican legislators. So we have indicated to him we're willing to talk to him about redistricting reform, willing to talk about issues dealing with collective bargaining, but not eliminate unions. We told him we're also willing to work on workers' comp reform, but had to remind him that we passed a bill, major reform 4 years ago, which has resulted in almost a 20% reduction in premiums. So this is deja vu, and I don't know what else to say other than the fact we're willing to compromise with him.
It's something of a deja vu moment again as well, because this is a kind of a similar choice that former Governor Pat Quinn gave lawmakers a few years ago, a budget I'd really rather not have to live with on the one hand, and the one that only lets us spend within our means.
But spending within our means, if you look at the legislation carefully, allows for the governor to skip pension payments. We're not going to do that again. That's what got us in this crisis. So he complained about the pension underfunding in the past, but then he proposes that we can start doing it again. So there's an example of something which just won't work. His recollection of what happened last year is he didn't propose a balanced budget. His budget was $6 billion over budget. We passed a budget, which we admitted was over budget, but only by $4 billion. So we told him, we're willing to meet you in the middle, either revenues or cuts, just like he said today. But he forgets that the Constitution allows him to reduce the budgets. He has the authority to veto or a reduction veto in the budget. He didn't do that last year. He can do that again this year. So rather than skipping pension payments. So there's just a lot here that the governor stated which doesn't appear to be accurate, to be polite. And so we'll have to review it and respond to it.
He did say that he has been working with you on the notion of your version of pension reform, which we've discussed previously on the program. But he said he doesn't have a bill. He's ready to put anything in there that you and I suppose the Democratic staff.
I met with the governor yesterday and talked to him about the pension reform bill. I told him the lawyers were going back and forth with different language. I told him I appreciated his support, but I also told him it would be very difficult to pass the bill in the absence of a big agreement. In spite of that conversation I had with her yesterday, maybe his speech was already written and he felt the need to say that I haven't filed the bill yet. I explained to him why the bill hasn't been filed yet. So I hope he accepts my explanation again.
He again talked about the idea of education funding reform. That's something that's a matter that's close to your heart. I know you've talked about that.
We have the worst, most unfair funding formula in America. We give the least amount of money from the state to the school districts in America. Those two together are toxic. He did not propose reforming that. He introduced some kids from a local high school and he promised to spend more money. They might get less money under the funding formula that we have here today. There's winners and losers in our funding formula every year. He talked about Chicago very inaccurately. Chicago does not get an extra $600 million from the school aid formula. The fact is Chicago gets nothing for their pensions, where the rest of the state gets that money. The proposals that we talked about would eliminate the unfairness
of the school aid formula as it relates to Chicago. It's not a bailout. We're talking about a formula that would be for the entire state and send more money to areas where there's a concentration of poverty. That's what we need to continue to work on.
He's talking about education funding reform. The Senate took the lead on that over the last year in a bipartisan manner. The House is now holding hearings on that. Is that something you think you can achieve by the end of this session?
Absolutely, we do. And it's a critical measure to any funding of our schools has to include a better way to spend the money that we are appropriating before we start adding even new money. Mm-hmm.
In terms of going back to the budgetary authority he wants, that's carte blanche to do whatever he wants.
Well, it appears to eliminate the role of the legislature in deciding and authorizing spending, which is traditionally what the legislature does. We don't have like a CEO of the state that gets to do anything they want with a compliant board of directors. We're the legislature. He does, though, after we send him a budget, have the authority to do reductions, and that's what he should consider doing.
In terms of the education proposal he put out there today that would be bringing the general school aid formula back up to its full funding, first time in 7 years.
That's about $60 million that he wants to add. If we don't change the school funding formula, there'll be hundreds of school districts that will lose money. Chicago itself lost $60 million last year while New Trier got more money. That's a bad formula. It doesn't mean anything to throw $60 million out when we spend $12 billion on education and think that that's going to reform anything.
He's having the two Republican leaders introduce a standalone K-12 education bill. That's obviously feels there's a need for them to get on board with this proposal, but at the same time, holding it separate from the rest of the budget, is there any confidence that there will be a budget?
I don't even know what that means. Does he not want to fund the rest of state government? And I come back to it. If you throw money at the schools without funding, changing the formula, which is the most unfair in the nation, it's not a reform.
He mentioned from the floor a few minutes ago that another attempt to run the AFSCME bill, pretty much the same bill. The House, of course, has voted on that. They failed to override it when he vetoed it. Is the Senate going to take that up?
Yes, we will.
Binding arbitration bill?
Yes, we will. And, of course, what we're trying to say here is we're trying to find a way in which these guys can come together on a contract. And we want to avoid a strike. My God, that's the last thing we need in this state. And that's why we're doing it. And if he wants to change the arbitration process to make it fairer, we're open for compromises on that as well. But it's much better than having a strike.
But he says in the long run what this does, it basically takes the government out of the determination of how these contracts are decided, disputes.
That's not true.
He says it's an unfortunate, it's a tax increase. It's a $3 billion tax increase.
One person's cut in their revenue is another person's tax increase, I guess, when you're talking about the public employees. What we want is a fair contract and a fair process where they can reach an agreement with an arbitrator instead of having a strike.
He has threatened to veto the MAP funding bill and the community college funding bill that the Senate finally sent over this
yesterday.
Week. What's your expectation?
You know what? The governor has to understand that right now, if he wants to spend any money on the MAP grants, he doesn't have the authority to do that. We're giving him the authority to spend the money. If he doesn't think he has the full $390 million, he can send them whatever he thinks he has. We're giving him the authority to spend money for this current budget year. This is something he vetoed in the past. We have to pass it so he can get these schools, some of which are about to close, some money. So this is why this is so important.
One of the schools that's considering a terrible situation, Chicago State University, has invoked what's called financial exigency. That's the nuclear option in cutting costs and higher education.
I'm telling you, the Eastern and Western are very adversely affected by this stalemate as well. So it's not just one part of the state. And we're putting the authorization on the board. We don't spend the money, the governor spends money. We authorize him to spend. That's why we passed the bill.
Will there be a compromise bill that includes senior universities as well?
Well, this is just the MAP grants, which are go to the public institutions as well as private schools. We also, obviously, have to pass an appropriation for this calendar year, not next fiscal year, for education, for their operations. We haven't funded them. They've been living on their tuition money, and they're about to run out. So people are making decisions about not coming to our schools next year because of this impasse. It's really critical that we get him to sign an appropriation.
The document that you're going to be studying a little bit later this afternoon, the spending plans for the coming fiscal year, an unprecedented situation. You're 8.5 months into the current fiscal year. Is what he put on the table today dead on arrival?
Well, I hate to use words like that, but it just sounds so impractical. Last year, his budget wasn't balanced. He hasn't proposed anything even close to a balanced budget today, like as he's required to. We're not going to. If his solution is to skip pension payments, we're not going to do that. So I would say we have to really start from scratch with him again after a year.
Senate President John Culkin, thanks so much for your time on the program. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Up next, we're going to hear from the Senate Republicans leader, Christine Redonio, on this edition of Illinois Lawmakers.
Not only did Chicago Public Schools ask for the current arrangement, they are benefiting from a special deal. CPS receives an extra $600 million more every year than school districts with similar student demographics. Any school funding reform proposal that involves taking money from one school district and giving it to another is doomed to fail. To achieve formula changes, we must increase state support for education so that no community has state funding taken away as part of reform. I pledge to work with you on this issue to find a bipartisan way forward. But nothing should delay the General Assembly from funding early childhood education and K-12 schools for the coming fiscal year.
On Illinois Lawmakers, we're joined by Senate Republican Leader Christine Redonio of Lamont. Good to have you back with us.
Good to be here.
The governor's given lawmakers a choice here, a choice that he says kind of comes down to passing some significant structural reforms, an addition of possibility of more revenues to help things along, or giving him the authority to make the cuts that he thinks are necessary without a tax increase. He says he's not going to go for any kind of new revenue package here unless there is significant reform.
Well, yes, he did say that because, of course, we've tried that and it wasn't successful. So I think he laid out pretty clearly what our options are at this point, and unfortunately, we don't have too many options. Either we can continue doing the same thing and not just sitting still and digging the hole deeper and deeper, or we can come together and compromise, which he stressed over and over he's willing to do, or if the Democrats don't want to do that, give him the authority to balance that budget.
The Senate president was just here a few moments ago, and I don't know if you were able to hear what Senator Cullerton had to say, but he indicated that if you're giving that kind of blanket authority to make cuts, that could include skipping pension payments, which is what got us partly into this mess to begin with.
Well, that's one tool that is amongst a number of them in that particular package. I sincerely doubt that is what would happen. In fact, it would actually allow him to make those pension payments in a slightly delayed manner. But there's many other tools. I think what that bill addresses is the fact that under current law, the governor's hands are so tied that he really can't make the kinds of changes that have to be made in order to balance the budget.
I heard something a little new here today, and that was that although he listed pretty much every item that's been in the turnaround agenda since this time last year, he said not every item has to be passed. I'm open to negotiations. I'm ready to talk about some of these things. Where do you think some of the progress could be made? The Senate president did talk about some things like workers' compensation reform and the like.
Well, absolutely. And again, that was not new to me because I think the governor has said over and over and over that he's willing to compromise. Workers' comp is low-hanging fruit. I think there's definitely room there to compromise and come up with an agreement. But there are other things, too, such as pension reform, which the Senate president has expressed an interest in previously, that would be $1 billion of savings. The governor wisely is not taking it immediately. But we want the Democrats to engage with us in order to pass those things.
He indicated that he wants to hold K through 12 education and early childhood education in particular apart from this whole budgetary process right now, or the ongoing discussions. And he's called upon you and your Republican counterpart here in the House, Jim Durkin, to write the bill, to introduce the legislation.
Well, and actually, I'm excited to be able to introduce that bill. The fact of the matter is, everyone under this dome says education is their top priority. Here's a perfect time to pull education out of the political wrangling, let parents, children know that they can count on the state. That's the one thing that most people in this state access and use. And importantly, education is the key to economic growth. So let's do it and move on.
It's kind of an ironic situation, though. Last year, the K through 12 budget that was and is in effect now didn't receive a single Republican vote in the House or Senate, and it's the one we're living with now, yeah. And now he's turning it over to you and Jim Durkin.
Well, that's true, and you know, I think we've seen the light that education, you know, absolutely has to be funded in order to provide stability for our state. And who wants to move in a state if you don't know that your kids are going to be able to start school in the fall? That is critical. And so what he's proposed is fully funding the foundation level, something that hasn't been done in 7 years, that will help school districts that receive a lot of money from the state because it eliminates the proration.
I'm kind of a professional skeptic, and I think we all are here, having been around this place for a while. Could it also be a reflection that, you know, we may not get the other part of the budget done for quite some time to come?
Well, perhaps it is, but what's wrong with that? Education is the top priority. It ought to be funded, and that's what everyone agrees to.
The Senate president said there were some areas that he thought he could take exception with. He thinks the governor was in error when he talked about the Chicago public school system getting $600 million more than comparable districts that have similar kinds of demographic trends and needs and issues and the like. And he talked about the possibility of CPS going to court against the state of Illinois over the situation with their funding would be a big mistake, a big setback.
Well, I agree. The $600 billion figure is based on information that was provided by the State Board of Election under Governor Quinn. So the numbers are what they are. You can interpret them however you want and say there's offsets in other places. But the fact is, Chicago does receive a very sweet deal from the state. We are proposing a funding formula that reflects the movement of students. I mean, Chicago has actually lost students, over 25,000 in the last 10 years. So why would you continue a bureaucracy, a funding level that doesn't reflect that students have moved out?
There's some skepticism on the Democrat side of the aisle that although today the governor seemed almost conciliatory, as he said, his hand is outreach. He's trying to achieve some compromise on some of these key issues. Last week, the governor was in downstate Tuscola. He told reporters and the audience there he's winning the fight to make business Illinois more business friendly. But he said, I won't raise taxes on the people of Illinois until I know we're getting value for your taxes. And when we've seen real strong economic growth creating jobs in the state. Does that mean we've got to see more Caterpillar tractors being sold to China before we're going to do anything? I mean,
no, it means we can't repeat a failed initiative. The failed initiative is raising taxes and doing everything the same. The governor's message has not changed in substance one bit. I mean, I recognize today the tone was very conciliatory, which I think is good. But the fact of the matter is, the message is, we can't keep the same failed approach. If we're going to have a revenue increase, it can only happen if taxpayers are getting the value they deserve for that.
The Senate president has indicated he wants to see education reform achieved before he sees a new budget for the coming school year. That's been a big issue. The Senate, in a bipartisan approach has been working on this for over a year now. Senator Menard, Senator Lechtefeld from your caucus, the House is just now taking this up. Is it realistic to think that this can be done before the end of May when you're supposed to go home?
I don't think it's realistic. Number one, the approaches being taken have not been particularly bipartisan. I think that needs to be led from the administrative level. However, I think there's a consensus that we do need to take another look at the formula. But that formula is designed to provide money to those districts that do not have the property tax wealth to be able to fund their own schools. And it does still function, albeit I agree we need to re-examine it. But the point of funding education, in addition to the fact that it is our top priority and is good for job growth and good for individuals, is that we need to provide some consistency, some assurance to the parents and children in the state that they can count on the state to deliver that basic service.
Is that holding school children hostage, as you suggested?
I think the approach of not funding education, absent a complete rewrite of the formula, is holding hostage.
There's, of course, right now in the Senate has sent the governor the Democratic bill to fund MAP, funding the monetary award program for low-income college students, a community college funding bill to get them through the remainder of this fiscal year. The governor's threatened to veto that. He says there's not enough money there to do that. But at the same time, the senior universities in the state are running out of money. Chicago State University, not too far from your home, has declared a financial emergency. They may start laying off faculty any time now. Where's the rest of the higher education budget in all this big mix?
Well, I think when you dig into the proposed budget that the governor has offered that would include working together, higher education is funded at 80% of what it was previously. Additionally, there's some incentive money to help higher ed function more efficiently based on important matrices such as having kids graduate in 4 years. So there's some real innovation built into this budget as well that's going to take some time as people go through it to discern all of that.
Going back a few years, back to the Edgar administration, I remember a program called PQP, Productivity, Quality, and Performance, and so on, as a way of trying to raise the bar for universities to get efficiencies going. Would you favor an organized plan like that as opposed to what appears to be a very Darwinian way of shaking things out right now?
Well, I think that, look, competition, I'm a true believer in it. I think it leads to innovation, and I think that's what we're looking at. We're looking at it in terms of how can higher education institutions better prepare our students, get them out into the workforce, and do it, deliver that product in a cost-effective manner for the taxpayers. We've gotten away from that focus.
Got a couple of moments left. I want to also ask about, the House has gone back and taken a new look at the Ask Me bill, which is to send disputes to binding arbitration. The governor says that's a $3 billion forced tax increase. Is that going anywhere?
I think it will have a hard road to actually become law. It did not receive a supermajority in the House. And I hope that knowing that the bill is dead.
Speaking of things possibly deceased, this is a political document we just saw today. Mm-hmm. I've been doing this for 25 years. I've never seen one passed completely intact from what the governor says downstairs. How much, if any, of this do you think will actually see the light of day?
Well, it is my hope that preferred plan of compromise is the one that we take. It bends the cost curve of doing business. To adopt the other plan is really very radical and extreme. So if the Democrats don't engage in this process of compromise, they are choosing a very extreme path. To use the Speaker's words, I would hope that we would choose the more moderate path that includes that compromise.
We hope to talk to him about moderation a bit later in the program. Senator Redonio, thanks very much for your time on the program.
Thank you.
Up next, we're going to hear from the House Republican leader, Jim Durkin of Western Springs.
That leaves us with only two choices. Either you give the executive branch the authority to cut spending to live within our revenues, or we agree together on economic and governmental reforms to accompany a negotiated balance of spending reductions and revenue that ensures that Illinois can be both compassionate and competitive. You choose, but please choose now. Let's stop wasting time by voting on spending bills you know must be vetoed, and then doing it again and again and again.
I have no, you guys are gonna have to queue.
I have no feedback.
Yeah, I didn't feed either. Oh, we lost, did we lose?
We have, up next on the program, we have State Representative Jim Durkin of Western Springs. Good to have you back. Your first takeaway from what Governor Rauner had to say today, sir.
Well, I think the governor was very clear about what we need to do and what we can accomplish together. And I emphasize together. And that's what I draw from that. And the governor stated that we can find common ground, but we have to move quicker rather than slower. And I just hope that my friends, the counterparts, the speaker and the president, let's put aside some of these differences we have. We can't find an agreement to get through the problems that we're currently existing, what we're living through, but also about moving into FY17. And the governor is willing to compromise. Let's make it very clear. What I've been hearing from over and over again is that the Republicans are not willing to compromise with the Democrats. It's just the opposite. We're willing to talk about tax increases. We're willing to, you know, work with the Democrats on their priority. But we need something back in return.
What he did today was kind of interesting. It kind of harkens back to approaches previous governors have tried. We've all talked about the doomsday scenario, a budget reality so horrifying no one would ever want to live through it because of the kind of cuts that would be imposed and all across the board. Or the scenario that the governor put forth, his preferred pathway on this would be pass some of my reform agenda to grow jobs, to make the state more business friendly, to reduce expenses, and then we'll work on revenues. Do you have a figure in mind for what the revenues might be?
No, not yet, but I think it's important to know that a Republican governor in his first term is willing to support a tax increase only upon the condition that there are other areas that we have conditioned as part of it, and that are structural reforms, and there obviously would be some cuts as well, but that is the preferred way to be able to solve this problem, is to do it in a negotiated manner. The option for the governor, hopefully we won't get to that point, but if he's left with nothing, we have one of two ways to be able to solve this problem, which he laid out. But not to choose either one of them is just will really be a devastating effect upon this state. It's going to continue the impasse. We need to bring closure to this. I think the governor was fair saying that if we can't do his preferred way of solving our budget problems and moving into the next fiscal year, then give me the authority like we have given, Republicans have afforded Democrat governors. I remember when Pat Quinn took over, shortly after he took over after Blagojevich was impeached and removed from office. He inherited a terrible financial situation. He asked Republicans for help with emergency budget relief. We, including myself, supported him on that.
It's called a lump sum budget. He has extraordinary authority to go back and move funds back and forth.
He made that request in his ability to be able to manage a budget, and I'm asking the Democrats to extend that same courtesy that Republicans extended to the Democrat governor about 6 years ago.
That's kind of a variation on what we talked about 3 weeks ago when the governor was talking about asking for authority to move funds around that are in existing funds. There's like 600 special funds in the
Correct.
State of Illinois with billions of dollars still parked there. They're set aside for specific purposes.
Correct.
But that would be a way toward helping the state's higher education system.
We're in a very unique time. Exactly. And if we have to look at certain funds that may have to be trimmed, we certainly would. We should be able to keep that option. But we made a decision last fiscal year that we would sweep certain funds, but not to the point where those funds would not be able to accomplish the mission or the goal that those funds were created for. And that was we had to do that last spring. If we have to go down that road again, we may have to. We're in a very, very unique time, but it's all hands on deck. everything has to be on the table.
The Democratic Senate President, John Cullerton, was here just a few minutes ago, and I asked him about that carte blanche approach to going back in, or lump sum budget approach, however you want to describe it, in reallocating funds, cutting things, if we don't find some agreement on the turnaround agenda. And he said, well, I've got a problem with that because conceivably you could start doing things like skipping pension payments, which got us in this whole mess to begin with.
Well, that's kind of sensationalism, and I think that's unrealistic, and I think that Senator Cullerton was just trying to use an example, but one that we are never going to bother with. Now, the Senate, I mean, if anything, the Republicans should be afraid of what the Democrats would want to do with the pension payments, because they kind of wrote the book on how to skip payments back under Rob Blagojevich, under President Cullerton, also Senator Speaker Madigan. But I that's not going to happen. Let's be realistic. We're adults. That's not a situation. The governor has told me that we are not going to miss our dedicated payments to our public pension systems. But all I have to say is that before he dismisses that, again, why not give this Republican governor the same courtesy that Republicans have extended to Democrat governors in the past in times of fiscal calamity, which we are in right now? But if the president or the Democrats don't have, if they don't like either option, which is the first preferred option, which is revenue reforms and maybe some cuts, or option two, which would be unfortunate, but which would give the governor emergency budget relief power, then what is their option? What is their plan? Give us something else.
A proposal that he says he will not walk away from, that is absolutely non-negotiable, is more funding for K through 12 education, especially in the area of early childhood. He wants to bring up the foundation formula, wants to fully fund that for the first time in something like 7 years. He wants to add, I believe, what, another $75 million for early childhood education to make sure kids are ready to learn when they get to school. And he's put you and your Senate Republican counterpart, Chris Redonio, in charge of that.
I'm looking forward to it. We'll be introducing the bill shortly. And I think we should move on that immediately. Let's get that bill over to the governor as soon as we can. Let's not put those young K through 12 students and their families in any more stress that they're going through right now. The governor has been very consistent since he's been running for public office of what his thoughts on public education and funding for education are. And I don't think that they should be placed in the middle in this arm wrestling match that's going on down here. Look, we all believe that education and investment in our education, particularly through K through 12, is our greatest and our most important responsibility. And I applaud the governor. We need to move forward. Let's get this off the plates, and let's get back to the governing of state of Illinois and have some true negotiations on things that are going to help grow the economy, put people back to work, reduce the bureaucracy about our small businessmen and women throughout the state of Illinois.
But leader, as we talk about this, you know, another $75 million for early childhood, millions more for the general aid formula. We have about a $4 billion deficit right now, and billions in old bills, and no agreement on new revenues. Where are you going to find $75 million?
Well, just remember that even though we don't have a budget, people of Illinois need to realize that money is still coming into the state. It's not as if that money is not. So we have revenue that will be coming in this year. We don't know what the projection is, but it will be enough, first and foremost, to be able to fund our elementary through high school appropriations. But again, we got to get back to the table. The reforms that the governor has laid out for the past year, these are no secrets. There's going to be a revenue increase that we're going to see from them, and that's going to be able to chip away at the deficits and the old bills. And we know that, and I think that they understand that too. The deficits are not going to be wiped out overnight unless we have a tax increase of 100%. We're just not going to do that. We need to be responsible to the taxpayers. We need to get through this. We need to provide certainty, and I think it's unfortunate that we're in this position. But remember, it was the Democrats who last May who did create this uncertainty by passing a budget that was $4 billion out of balance. And the governor did the right thing by rejecting it and vetoing it outright.
And the Senate president said a few minutes ago, and he said a year ago, the governor's own proposal was $6 billion out of whack. He was counting $2 billion in pension savings from a bill that never was even passed.
Look, they acted on their own bill. They never gave the governor's bill a vote. But the fact is, they chose to pass their bill, which was not only just a little bit out of balance, but the second year in a row, billions of dollars out of balance. And they just said, well, governor, take it or leave it, just do what you want. That's irresponsible. That's not good governing. That's not the way to work together to solve the problems of Illinois. That's more of posturing. That's more of just getting in the governor's face and saying, you know what, you don't run this building. You won, but the fact is we've had it for 13 years and we're not going to let you run this building.
Some of the headlines of the week, the Democrats are making another run at the AFSCME bill, which sends unresolved labor negotiations into binding arbitration. The governor says that's a $3 billion tax increase on taxpayers. The House it passed out of here yesterday a few votes short of a veto-proof majority. Is that more gamesmanship on the
Absolutely.
Democrats' part?
Absolutely. This is about a couple primaries, and it's also about another mail piece. Jack, they didn't pass it. They tried to do it last spring and also back in September. They're going to find the same result. The governor, when he gets that bill, will veto it, and it will not be overridden in the House of Representatives. And so, again, it's about gamesmanship, and it's about the campaigns for this next season.
We talked about higher education. Of course, Chicago State is in a really bad way. Eastern Illinois University just sent out layoff notices to 200 employees. Western Illinois University is cutting jobs. Chicago State's talking about financial exigency. That's kind of the nuclear option when it comes to higher ed. The MAP bill that the governor's threatening to veto right now only talks about MAP funding for needy college students and community colleges. There's nothing in there for higher education at the moment.
Nothing at the moment, but higher ed is in a difficult situation. You know how we solve it? Work with us to be able to find a combination of revenue, reforms, and cuts. That's how we get to this. We bring this problem to a solution. We've been talking over this for a year. I can talk to them blue in the face, Jack, about what the Democrats need to do for us to solve the problems with higher ed. But sending a bill to the governor that has absolutely, there's no way to find revenue. There's no revenue attached to it. And when the sponsor of the legislation even said, how are you going to pay for this? He said, well, it's going to be put in the list of, in the line of people who are owed money at the state of Illinois. That to me is unfair. And I think it's really terrible that if anybody's misleading Illinois students for somehow that this bill is going to fund MAP. I think it's a cruel hoax, and I think it's unfortunate. And the governor, I believe, is going to do the right thing because we just don't have the money to pay for these things. To all of a sudden continue and say, okay, I'll sign this bill and we'll figure out how to pay it later, it's fiscally derelict, it's negligent, and that's not how you run a business nor a government.
Leader Durkin, thanks very much. Always good to have you
thanks,
on
Jack,
the program.
Thank you.
Coming up next, we'll have a conversation with the House Speaker, Democrat Michael Madigan of Chicago, on Illinois lawmakers.
Everyone in this chamber must come together in the spirit of compromise and bipartisanship. Let's work together to enact a bipartisan, balanced budget with a mix of reforms, cost reductions, and revenue, just as that Democratic lawmaker suggested. And by reforms, I mean real reforms that will allow Illinois to grow jobs, expand our tax base, and steadily reduce the total tax burden on Illinois families. The reforms we've put forward would make our government more efficient and save taxpayers' money. We've introduced procurement reform to save $500 million in the coming fiscal year alone. We've begun the work to sell the Thompson Center and save hundreds of millions of dollars. And we are negotiating a new labor contract that is fair to both state employees and taxpayers.
Rounding out our coverage of the reaction to Governor Rauner's second annual budget address to the Illinois General Assembly, House Speaker Michael Madigan, Democrat of Chicago.
Good afternoon.
Good to have you back, sir. Your first impressions on the message the governor had today?
The bulk of the governor's message is consistent with what I've been arguing since last January, that the number one problem facing the government of the state of Illinois is the budget deficit. I don't believe we can simply cut our way out of the budget deficit. I think we need a balanced approach, some cuts in spending, but new revenue through taxation on the wealthy. Furthermore, I don't think that the government of the state of Illinois should be in the business of lowering the wages and the standard of living of middle-class families. I just don't subscribe to that. I don't understand why the governor subscribes to that.
The governor says a lot of the things that he's proposing in the turnaround agenda, giving local governments more authority over collective bargaining to set wages in specific areas of the state, workers' compensation reform, all of those are things that will ultimately lead to billions of dollars in new revenue for the state.
That's the governor's economic theory. That's the economic theory of the far right. I say again, government should not be in the business of lowering the wages and the standard of living of middle-class families, driving injured workers to welfare and to the emergency room. That's not the role of government, not in the United States of America.
There was something a little new that I heard today, and that was, well, not every item of the turnaround agenda has to be passed. He says, I've got my hand outstretched to you. I'm ready to talk. I'm ready to compromise. Is there any hope in that from what you, do you take any hope from what you just heard?
Well, 2 points. Number one, the elements in the turnaround agenda have changed over time. They come and they go. Number two, speaking for myself and for the House, we've met the governor halfway on numerous occasions. The House has passed a bill which would change workers' compensation. The House passed a bill that would give the governor what he wants in the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity by privatizing that agency. The House on 17 occasions has called a bill that would freeze real estate taxes. So we've done a good job of meeting the governor halfway. We continue to be ready to compromise. And again, my pledge, which I gave in January of a year ago, I want to work professionally and cooperatively with the governor, but we must address the number one problem facing the government of the state of Illinois, which is the budget deficit.
To my knowledge, and please correct me if I'm wrong, there's only been one joint meeting of the legislative leaders and the governor since the General Assembly adjourned at the end of May. What meetings have you been having since then? Have there been any one-on-ones with the governor?
As you know, there have been multiple meetings since Mr. Rauner became the governor. I've met with the governor alone. I've met with the governor and other people. But please understand that the governor has set down a very extreme agenda. It's an extreme right-wing agenda.
The governor is also kind of hard to read for some Democrats. Last week in downstate Tuscola, he told an audience there that he's winning the agenda that he's trying to push here, and he's not really willing to talk about raising taxes until we've got, quoting now, real strong economic growth creating jobs in the state. Until I can say that, we're never raising taxes in this state. Is that a seismic shift in his thinking, or?
I don't plan to engage in winning and losing and winners and losers. The losers through all of this are the people that are dependent upon the state, the vulnerable in our society. Those are the losers in all of this, and that ought not to be happening.
One of the things he said today earlier, right off the bat, was it's a choice between two pathways. One pathway, his preferred pathway, is some compromise, some revenue growth, and moving forward. The other one that he would not prefer to take is, if he can't get any progress on his agenda, then we're not going to raise taxes, we're not going to find new revenues, and he wants basically blanket authority to go into the budget, as Democrats have given previous governors in the state of Illinois, kind of a carte blanche to do a lump sum budget.
Sure. And I would say again, I've pledged, and I've kept my pledge, to work professionally and cooperatively with the governor. Number one problem facing the government of the state of Illinois is the budget deficit. You simply cannot cut your way out of the budget deficit problem. It requires cuts and new revenue, especially taxation on the wealthy. All of that could be resolved if people would put their extreme ideas to the side. Nothing I've said is extreme. It's consistent with the history of the state over the last 40 to 45 years. It simply is a question of a budget deficit problem. As Governor Edgar had in 1991, where I worked cooperatively with him to eliminate that budget deficit problem. When Governor Edgar left office in 1998, it was a surplus.
About $1 million.
Correct.
$1 billion, if
correct.
I recall. And the that was after what we called June 48th back in the day.
Sure. That's a good example, is to where people being reasonable, not advocating extreme agendas, can come together and solve a governmental problem.
But all of this is taking place against the backdrop of contested primary elections that are seeing hundreds of thousands of dollars pumped into them by various political groups on both sides of the aisle. All that's coming up in a few weeks. You've got a general election where the control of the General Assembly is always, to a certain degree, playing itself out. How do you remove the politics from the politics of getting stuff done here, Speaker?
By sitting down, being reasonable, taking extreme agendas, putting them off to the side. My argument that the government ought not to be in the business of reducing the wages and the standard of living of middle-class families is not extreme. That's been accepted governmental theory in the United States since 1933, when Franklin Roosevelt was elected the president of the United States.
As we talk today,
since 1933, national governments, Democrat and Republican, have worked to raise wages and the standard of living, not decrease them.
Among the ideas he expressed today was the idea of having the two Republican caucus leaders propose the spending plan for fiscal year 17 for K through 12 education.
Sure. Right. I applaud the governor in wanting to provide more money for elementary and secondary education. I would hope that he would support my idea to put a surcharge on millionaires to pay for it. And I would hope this year, contrary to what happened last year, that he would instruct the House Republicans to vote for the bill. You may remember, a year ago, there was a significant increase for elementary and secondary education. The governor instructed the House Republicans to vote no. They voted no.
And in the long run, that's the bill he signed.
Correct.
At this point, though, the budget-making process begins here in the House. Do you plan to let the Republicans move forward with crafting the K through 12 bill?
As always, we will offer to the Republicans to join us in the budget making. That's been our standard procedure over several years, to invite the Republicans to join us in the budget making, to collaborate in the draft of a balanced budget, and a budget that works to eliminate the budget deficit.
As we talk this afternoon, this is new territory for all of us here. We're 8.5 months into fiscal year 16. We're talking about fiscal year 17. There's no real budget beyond court orders and administrative action for the current spending plan, and it's kind of out of control at this point. Can you give our viewers and listeners a roadmap for getting out of this?
Correct. Let's be reasonable. Let's not advocate non-budget issues that in effect will lower the wages and the standard of living of middle-class families, send injured workers to welfare and to the emergency room. Let's not do that. Let's look at each other as you and I are looking at each other right now, and let's say to each other, the number one problem facing the government of the state of Illinois is the budget deficit, not the benefit level in workers' compensation, not the presence of collective bargaining rights for workers, not the prevailing wage in the construction industry.
The headlines from this week, of course, the House of Representatives yesterday went back and addressed the idea of binding arbitration in labor negotiations where things hit impasse. A lot of your caucus wants to see that achieved, but by the same token, it moved out of here with a few votes less than a supermajority. The Republicans say that's going nowhere. They suggest that you're just playing games at this point because of some primaries that you got going.
Here's the point. We considered this last year. At the time we considered this issue, Governor Rauner promised that he would negotiate in good faith with the unions that represent state workers. The governor has shut down the negotiations. He's walked away from the table. And the bill sponsor yesterday argued that one purpose of the advocacy of the bill yesterday was to get the governor to return to the bargaining table, which I think he should do.
At this point, as we talk, the governor is poised to veto a bill that was passed out of the House and Senate that would fund the monetary award program for low-income college students. That's millions of dollars for students attending both community colleges and higher education institutions around the state. The bill also has money for community colleges. It looks like he's going to veto that any moment now. And at the same time, the higher education community is facing the possibility of calamitous cuts. Where are we going with that?
This points to a basic inconsistency. Today, the governor said he wants to raise the level of appropriation for elementary and secondary education, but he can't provide a decent level of support for community colleges and for the MAP program, which helps poor children go to college. So there's some inconsistency in his level of support for education. I applaud his interest in raising the level of support for elementary and secondary education, but I would say to the governor, take a couple more steps and support more money for community colleges and for the MAP program.
He singled out the Chicago public school system today during his speech here, saying that the schools get $600 million more than other districts that have the same same kinds of issues.
The Chicago school system is the largest system in the state. It's 86% poor children, 85% minority, 16% English learners. It deserves special attention, special consideration.
The House, of course, is holding hearings on education funding reform. Is that doable by the end of the session?
I would hope so, and our purpose in the joint committee, which is bipartisan committee, is to examine the current distribution system and method and determine if there's inequity in the system, which people have alleged that there is. And if we find inequity, if we find lack of adequacy, then we're going to move to propose a change in that formula.
We're going to have to close on that point, Mr. Speaker. Thank you so much for your time, as always. Thanks for joining us on Illinois Lawmakers. We'll be back during the month of May for weekly coverage of the spring session of the Illinois General Assembly. From the entire team in Springfield with Illinois Lawmakers, so long from Springfield.